Welcome to Influential She, the podcast about accelerating the influence of women in the world.
You will find us to be a fresh voice in an old conversation.
And here we are, your amazing co-hosts, Deb Soholt
and Mel Schopp.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Influential She, our conversation about accelerating the influence of women in the world. I'm your co-host, Deb Soholt.
And I'm Mel Schopp, and today we are going to be talking about the high leverage practice of leveraging as if. And Deb, this is one that you and I have had many conversations about, just because I think throughout our lives, we had to do a lot of, I don't like calling it faking it until you make it, but you know, when we walked into those new situations, whether it was in a new job or a new role, you know, instead of doing what is common to do, of waiting and waiting, waiting for someone to allow us to do something, we had to just forge ahead.
Absolutely. And you know what? I think sometimes people think when you go, like you said, you don't really like the fake it till you make it, because some of that feels like you're really putting yourself in a space where you have no credentials to belong at all. I mean, you're just completely not equipped to take on whatever the task is. And so when we think about as if, we think about, you know, proceeding until apprehended, you know, that we have the skill, we're not waiting around for permission, and we're really just getting into the space and acting as if we should be in that space. And I think sometimes we sit back and don't have as much confidence. And you've felt that sometimes, haven't you, Mel?
Oh, definitely. And, you know, so many of the decisions I had to make, because you just knew that they were going to be oftentimes big ones. But boy, I was thinking about you as we were talking about this just a minute ago. You're just finishing up the legislative session, and wow, I mean, this is part of the role you have played for the last 8 years. There had to be situations and times when you knew that when you walked into that committee meeting or you stood up on the floor, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, I was thinking back to just, you know, beginning in the Senate and how it felt, you know, the first time I went in and your nameplate is on the desk and you've never really been in this legislative space as an elected official. You bring a skill set to it, but it was like, wow, okay, I have to put my shoulders back and I just have to proceed into this space and learn, but really know legitimately that I have a right to be here, that I was elected to be here, and to start acting as if I am a state senator, which, you know, in fact I was. So many times was in that situation of needing to act as if. And we have a wonderful guest today who has really lived her whole life this way.
Yeah, and I'm going to take it from here because I'm so excited to have her with us today. Mary Ann Arcila is actually speaking to us from California today, Sacramento. And boy, I'll tell you what, in the brief time that I've gotten to know her and been able to interact with her, I can't tell you how many times, Mary Ann, you've impressed me with your ability to manage the work that you do, which is a huge, huge job. So Mary Ann, if you could just boil it down really quickly, tell us what you do, because it's pretty amazing.
And welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here. I'm looking forward to talking with you all, and I'm just really happy to be here. I've been in education, research, and assessment for over 30 years, but I've been in the education area for quite a long time. For the most part, throughout my career, the simplest description or the most common job description that most people will understand is that I was a program manager, am a program manager or program director. But a lot of times I like to describe it as being a puzzle master, because essentially what I do is I run large programs, and currently I am the executive director of one of the largest testing programs in California, in the U.S. for the state of California. And we run the testing programs, statewide testing programs in California. So we test over 6.2 million kids across a lot of different tests. And it's a year-round testing program. And so there's quite a bit of work to do, and a fairly large team, and a lot of innovation and things that need to get done, and definitely a lot of like problem-solving challenges. Generally, I'm a program manager and doing a lot of different things, but I do like to call myself a puzzle master, because that's really what I think it boils down to, is how to, you know, figuring out how to solve what you need to solve.
Probably one of the biggest things that you solved initially, which is a huge undertaking that cannot be overlooked, is that you moved to California in all the K-12 space, going from a paper pencil assessment to online, and it was done seamlessly within a 1 year period of time. That's a huge, huge accomplishment. But in doing that, Marianne, there had to have been times when you were feeling a little bit of anxiety about the responsibility and how that was all going to go. And can you talk a little bit about that, how you had to come into that situation?
Oh, sure. Yeah, that was quite an interesting time because California at the time was 100% paper testing. So people, and that program had been going on for quite a while. So people were used to, you know, number two pencils and putting the things in the boxes and all that. And so when the state decided to go paper pencil, and this is when the No Child Left Behind Act was in place, the goal was to get California online testing within a short period of time. So it's kind of, it was kind of like ripping off the Band-Aid right off, so that, you know, we got it done. And it was a big undertaking. In the sense of, it was new to California, it required a bit of work locally at the school districts and the schools. There was different. California is very much a local control state, so each district had their own things going on as far as implementing technology, how they did their school years, and so on. So there were a lot of pieces of the puzzle to put together. I think one of the, for me, one of the most nerve-wracking things throughout all that was the timing of trying to make sure that the right pieces were in place and prioritizing which were the right pieces. You know, it wasn't perfect. We definitely had, I definitely heard my sheriff yelling for sure, you know, of angry LEAs and, you know, even the client and all that. And so there were times when you know, I questioned, like, wow, is this really worth it? But in the end, you know, the goal was to get to a certain place because it made things a lot easier and would make a lot of things easier in the long run. You know, we'll get technology out there across the state. We'll know where we need to work on for the future. We will have a new statewide testing program that you know. We'll assess the current standards. And so there was a lot at stake in that sense. And so throughout when we were still working on the PowerPoint, you know, half an hour before we had to train the school districts and things like that, the goal, you know, I always tried to keep the end goal in mind and know that, you know, in some cases, the path that we set forward, we might have to alter that, but that's okay. We'll get there. And so it's like, it's the whole as if mentality, like, well, it's as if we're already there online testing. We'll get there. We might have to adjust. And the team that I worked with was really great and helped, you know, really, we really got together in the sense of teamwork. And as long as we kept up that attitude of we'll get there, we'll keep going, we'll communicate, we'll be as transparent as possible, but it'll happen.
You know, Marianne, when you were talking about, okay, we had 1 year, we had to rip off the Band-Aid, you know, people were totally not ready. You yourself, when you talk about, like, I'm doing a PowerPoint right before I go in, we're actually creating it as we go, that is just really being as if, that as the leader, you're acting as if, okay, we are already in this technology space. Can you talk a little bit about how that felt? And what were some of the vulnerabilities you felt inside when you were doing that, but then just proceeding ahead, proceeding till apprehended? Talk about that a little
bit. Sure. So I think all of us, I know I certainly do, have like your inside voice and your outside voice. So my inside voice was running around, screaming, saying, what are you doing? You're crazy. you know, you should really get some sleep. You're going to get sick and, you know, all sorts of things like that. And, you know, one of the things that you guys had described earlier about not sure if you had the credentials or that you were supposed to be there. You know, that also was a big factor. Like, well, you know, this is all new. I don't know if I'm supposed to be doing this, whatever this is, to get us to online testing. But in my outside voice, I knew that part of what I had to do was make sure that I was as calm and logical as possible so that the team didn't see the craziness inside, so that we can continue to make progress in the right path. I think one of the things that, and there were times, you know, really, there were times when I didn't know how we could pull it off or what we needed to do. A lot of times I had to sit a moment, and even though we had things due, we had to go out, you know, to do the training or release the system. I did have to step back and just pause a moment to think about what is the logical next step or what does need to happen so that we can keep moving forward. And so, I had the, on the one hand, in the inside, the anxiety, you know, making sure I'm doing the right thing, but on the outside, trying to make sure that we kept it moving, the team was good, we had what we needed. Some decisions I made were great decisions. Some decisions were so not great, but then I learned to adjust and keep it moving.
You know, Marianne, I think you've talked about a really important point that not necessarily is the inside of you aligned with what the outside of you has to be acting as if, and that it can feel like a lot of turmoil and maybe even sometimes not enough confidence but the confidence is from digging deeper and saying, okay, I have skills. I know what I'm doing in multiple arenas. I can translate that into this new arena, even though in this space, I'm not completely expert. And so, but the issue that you talked about is really staying calm on the outside. And I think sometimes we wait for both of those to be reconciled, that the inside and the outside are exactly the same. And I don't think that's true in as if. Is that how you felt?
Yeah, definitely. Because we had deadlines and you know, there are things that you just can't, wait, that you do have to make a decision or take an action, simply because there's a deadline if it's work, or, you know, maybe more personal in the sense of you have to make a decision about your health or your kids or whatever. And, especially in this day and age when there's lots of things that are going on, you're not always sure you're making the right decision. You have that. I have that anxiety maybe inside, but I feel that it's always better to take an action that is what you think is the best at the moment and just give yourself a little bit of flexibility to adjust, as you move towards your goal.
So Marianne, there's this professional side of you, which is completely and totally amazing, but there's a lot of things that make up you into this amazing individual I've gotten to know. First of all, I'd like to start with, your mom obviously had influence over you. I know that you shared with me something important that she used to tell you, or this little voice that talks to you in your head. Can you share that with us?
Yep, I sure can. And so, Deb, you had mentioned like what I was feeling inside. So one of the things I do feel when I'm just going through general, life in general, but certainly when I'm feeling anxious or when there's big decisions to make or a lot of things going on, is I actually do have a lot of other voices going on inside. And one of them is my mom. And she always used to say when we were growing up, when my sister or I were not wanting to do something because we didn't think we could do it, she'd always come back with, well, what do you mean you can't? Of course you can do it. What do you mean you can't? And so that's part of the dialogue in my head of when I start to think, well, maybe it's not, we can't do it. She'll come in my head and say, what do you mean you can't do it? Of course you could do it. And so, she had a lot of influence in the sense of, not doubting myself or just checking myself to make sure, well, is it legitimately you can't do it because, you know, you don't have the money or enough time, or is it because you're just fearful of what's next? And no, of course you could do it. Just do it. So that's been a big factor in my path in life.
And I think that's exactly what we more or less define as is that, you know, you're making those steps, and that you're, you know, in fact, I know that when we describe it, we talk about, you know, we get what we think about. And so definitely that was something that was ingrained into, but I think you've used that in other facets of your life as well. And if you don't mind sharing, I think that, you know, you also have had some really difficult personal things you went through at the same time. I know about 8 years ago, you shared with me the other day that you are now cancer free. And I think that obviously impacted you in ways that you had to keep that positive mindset.
Yes, that was, you know, her voice was certainly one of those in my head. My mom actually passed away in 2018 from her own health. She had breast cancer also, and she eventually passed away from a rare form of anemia. So she had her health difficulties. And so when I was diagnosed with breast cancer, she had already passed about 4 years. And so she was in my head through that whole time. And it was a difficult time in the sense that I knew inevitably with family history that there was a high probability that I also would be diagnosed with breast cancer. And then there was 8 years ago with that actual diagnosis. And I just remember feeling not cold or empty, but a feeling of like numb is probably the best word for it. And it, you know, when it's hard to make good decisions when you feel numb and you're not sure what to do, what's next. So having that kind of mindset, you know, of course you can do this. Of course you can beat this. Of course you can beat cancer. Of course you can take care of your health. That was very important in getting through that. So I did have surgery. And I also went through a round of radiation. And during that time, I actually worked almost full time through that, because that helped me get a sense of focus and something to kind of distract what else was going on. And at the same time, it helped me have a sense of purpose and normalcy, really, so that I could get through the radiation and the subsequent recovery.
How long was that treatment period?
It was 8 weeks. So surgery, and then there was a brief pause for my recovery from surgery. And then I did 8 weeks of radiation, and that was every single day, except for the weekend. So after work, I'd go to the radiation department and do my therapy. It did get difficult. It was hard sometimes to focus because, you know, my skin was peeling, and it was shocking, you know? So there are things like that happened. After that, I did have to do another surgery because of, not complications, but because, it exacerbated another health issue. That was a 12-week recovery. So, through that year, it was quite trying. But it was, you know, with the attitude of, okay, we'll get through this. This is the next step. We need to make a decision. We need to keep going. And it's not so much that, you know, I have to take action as something for me to get through something. But I also knew that if I wanted to be in a healthy place, that there were certain things I had to do, whether I liked them or not, or whether I thought that it was like the most perfect decision in the world or not. But keeping it to going so that I got to a place that I wanted to be.
Well, Marianne, you just remind us of how seriously tough women are. I mean, think of this, going through this treatment and working, and now I'm going to radiation. And you've talked about your deep-rooted values of, you know, you can do this. Why don't you think you can do this, from your mom, and inspiring you to really, it's tough. I mean, you articulated that this was not always easy. It was very hard, and things were happening to my skin, and I'm sure your energy level at times was just in the dumper. And yet you were acting as if, I can make my way through this, and I believe in a healing day when I'm going to be well, and to focus on that, where you talked about focusing on, you know, getting to the ending. But I'm just reminded of, you know, first of all, congratulations that you made it through
Thank
that.
You.
And so, sorry to hear that your mom then suffered. You know, I mean, it's really hard that that was in your family. But just the moxie to keep accelerating your influence while you were doing that. Women are tough. You're tough.
Thank you. Thank you.
You know, one of the things that we mention about when we live out the value or the of as if, I know if you want to call it a value, but when we leverage ourselves to be as if, reminds me of what you just talked about, where you know, you tap into that positive energy, which we all know we have even in those really difficult times. And it's positive energy of gratitude that we actually have, that we are able to manage that. And then to move away from those situations that are negative, because with, you know, it's easy to get caught up in that. When you're, particularly if you're, you know, your health is that way, or if there's other negative situations around you. So I think that all plays into it, how our mindset is. Anytime we go into a situation, whether it's a health situation, a personal situation, and a professional one, which I think you've dealt with all three of those with a lot of grace. What else can you tell us about that as you moved then, you know, that was a little earlier in the position you were in. Can you think of other situations where you had to really walk in to that with dealing with a situation of knowing that you had to own who you were and what you were doing and leveraging as if?
So when I first met you, Mel, which was maybe about almost a year ago,
right.
I was just recently promoted to my current position, which is executive director at Educational Testing Service. I had a great mentor, my boss, who was in this role, and he recently retired. He had retired last year, but was in this role. And so I worked with him for about 5 or 6 years, and it was a great experience for me. He was one of those, you know, jewels of people. It's just like solid, really nice. I mean, if there was a picture in the dictionary about nice, he would be there.
That's a great description.
He's you know, I was just really thoughtful about how he led. And so it was really, he was a really great role model for me. Subconsciously, I kind of knew he was getting ready to retire because his wife had just retired the year prior. And so during that year, I would casually say to him, hey, you're going to work here forever, right? Because I, you know, I didn't think I was ready to, if he were to retire or leave, that I could take on his role. And so I knew that there were things that I was doing during that year before he retired that were firsts for me, in the sense of, okay, I need to see if I can do this strategy piece, which is at the company I work in, I have a long history of being the operations person and really knowing how to make things run. And so strategy, although I think I do have a lot of experience with strategy, it wasn't seen as one of the things I was, you know, a priority in my skill set because of my previous role. And so I started doing things that were more strategic or contributing to the strategic plan to see what I can do in that area. And so when he did announce his retirement, I still didn't feel like I was ready. But I knew that that job was not going to go to anyone else, not because they couldn't give it, you know, away, but because I knew that that was my role. That was that's what I had been working towards, whether I wanted to admit it or not. And so there were, one of the things that I had to really think about is how I behaved, or you know, the things that I said. Not that I changed very much, but I knew more people were watching. And it was one of those things where I didn't feel like I had all the pieces, but I pretended, I felt that this is where I was supposed to be. This is where I wanted to be, and I'm going to make it work.
You know, that I just was looking back today. You had sent me a message not so long ago. You had actually been in it was a fortune cookie from a local restaurant. And this is what you said. This is what you had. It says, "Do you want to be a power in the world? Then be yourself." And that came from you, Marianne. So,
and I'm going to quote you guys back in one of you, one of the things that you, I think, Mel, it was you, connection doesn't occur until you bring the real you to the party. And so that's what I've been trying to help my team make sure that they do is be themselves. I mean, you have to be professional. You know, you can't just, if you're frustrated, you can't just yell. You have to walk through why you're frustrated and how to get through, you know, what the steps are to get to the finished product or to complete whatever activity you're doing. But you can do it by being you. And that's one of the things that I'm trying to get across to the team is that you can still do your work, but still be you so that you have some enjoyment out of it. And you can get something out of it while you're getting the work done.
So Marianne, if you were going to give some advice to others on how to start just acting as if for themselves to bring this energy to bear, even when you're not feeling completely ready for this space, what kind of advice would you give to those listening this podcast?
So one of the things I think is probably the greatest skill and probably one of my superpowers is listening. And it's really listening to your team, listening to your partners, listening to your family, not only what they say, but how they say it, how they express themselves, and then listen to yourself to see how you can contribute to the conversation, and just really know that it's a team or village, if you will, however you want to say it, but that by listening to others, you really can help yourself accomplish your goals, and that's really important to that you're not just a team of one. You're really a team of many people, listening to how they say things, how they express themselves, really helps me to understand where they're coming from and helps me understand how I can best help them and help the group, and then ultimately help myself in getting to the goal.
Okay, so you just gave me this great vision. I've been spending a few days with my granddaughter, and she always calls herself Superpower Girl. And so she runs through the house with her hand in the air at full speed, you know, just with her, and she's running through the room. It's Supergirl, Superpower. And this is exactly what I see Marianne right now as being, this Superpower Girl. And so that, Marianne, I think is your power, is that you've been able to do it.
Because, and that is...
Yeah.
Yeah, that is totally proceeding until apprehended.
It is.
That vision.
Yeah, so that's what I'm going to think of now when I think about you is, you know, and you're going to have that arm up and you'll be running full speed and you're going to have the, you know, the tailwind behind you. So you go, girl.
Oh, that's great.
Well, I think we're going to get things wrapped up here. I was so thankful, Marianne, for you taking the time. And just, you've been, I have to tell you that you've been an inspiration for both of us, because there's sometimes that you've really encourage us with the little things that you will say or you'll send and you'll have listened. And so I think that we can all learn from that, that we all are, you know, we're all there for each other to encourage each other along the way. And you have just lived out this practice of acting and living as if, because as I've even known you over the past year, boy, I'll tell you what, you have walked into the role and you have owned it. And so I want to just, you know, thank you for taking the time today, Marianne.
Thanks so much for being on the show, Marianne. It's great. I'm just going to visualize you racing around with your superpower.
Cape behind you.
I love it.
I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to another episode of Influential She. And we hope that you will continue to follow us. And we always like to end our podcast by giving you one big question to think about. So today, I want you to consider, are you living out what you envision yourself to be? Thanks again, and hope to tune in soon.
Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed our podcast, we'd be so jazzed if you rate us on whatever app you use to find us. And hey, be sure to tell all your friends about Influential She.
And please visit us at InfluentialShe.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. And you know what? If you come up with a new one, please let us know. In the meantime, remember, stay influential.